Today I'm in Sheffield with Claire Dalpra, who works for the Church Army, and we're sitting in glorious sunshine outside the tea room for the Church Army. It's amazing. So our first questions, the first question is, where did we first meet?
We met when I came down to meet you and your congregation, Heart for Rudlow, a couple of summers ago. I can't believe how long that's been. I was doing a bit of follow-up research to Day of Small Things, our big bit of research on fresh expressions of church in the Church of England. And one of the things we'd asked in that bigger bit of research, we'd asked leaders to estimate the proportions of people with churched, de-churched and non-churched backgrounds at their fresh expressions of church. And we realised that this is quite a tall order, because how is a leader supposed to know the church backgrounds of every single person in all its complexity? So we did a bit of follow-up research, and I came down to visit your congregation, and they filled in some questionnaires for us kindly to try and gather some data from attenders as well to sort of test out were the leaders' estimates correct.
Someone else while I'm on sabbatical is doing a presentation about Heart for Rudlow, and I wish I could remember this data properly, but we still now, we have about 20 children and 20 adults. Or at least when I left it for Phil to look after, that's how many people were coming. So sort of we got up to sort of 40-ish on numbers, but we worked out that we had about 30 people who'd come and left in that time, mainly because they'd moved away. And because of the military community, this term we've got our first returners who've been away from quarters and come back. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out in the longer term there. So I've left that all for Phil to look after while I'm away. So next question, do you drink tea?
I do, but I must confess I am a coffee lover. I would prefer to have a cup of coffee. I tend to drink tea when I've had too much coffee.
So do you have a favourite tea?
I've lived in Sheffield long enough to drink Yorkshire tea. No, no other tea. No, just Yorkshire tea.
Just Yorkshire tea. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I think the whole of the work that I've done and all the podcasts, there's a really high proportion of people who drink Yorkshire tea. Mm. So, yes. So the big question I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Yeah, that's a really interesting statement. We were chatting about this on our team. From our perspective, I think it's a curious mixture at the moment. It feels like the public face of the Church of England might be perceived to be sleeping, but actually all of the research we've done in our phone calls with leaders suggests that actually there's quite a lot happening under the radar. It feels in a local context quite modest stuff to the local leaders there, so it doesn't get trumpeted. Maybe that's a good thing. But actually, from our point of view, talking with leader after leader, where there's some creative stuff happening under the radar, that's why we wonder if it's a curious mix.
So I read that statement in an article by someone called Tim Stanley, who I've not yet managed to pin down for an interview. And he wrote it a couple of years ago in the Telegraph with an idea that we're sleeping and you could wake us up. But the evidence from where I work is very contradictory. So almost nothing I can do now can get people to come to church on a Sunday morning. Almost nothing. And last year, in the two big sort of parishes that I look after, was the first year that we had more weekday or non-Sunday morning attendances than we did Sunday morning. So we have moved to the majority of our attendances not being Sunday morning. And that's quite a difficult cultural shift, I think, for people. Also, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast I did with Stephen Cottrell, and he said people aren't writing it in their books, so they're not counting it. And we, a couple of years ago, moved into a very pedantic record keeping of writing everything which falls into the Fresh Expressions definition of worship goes in the book, whether or not it takes place in our church building. If we're responsible for it, it goes in the book. Mm-hmm. And that's quite good. But Bishop Stephen was saying that he was encountering churches where they didn't think to write those things in the book, so the records are not as clear, and the definition of worship is not as clear for them, I think.
Yeah. We wondered whether, if you stick with the human interpersonal analogy, whether it's almost as if the church is standing up, trying to stand up, and realising it's got a bit of a dead leg and doesn't quite know, like, it's having to relearn or do things for the first time. And that curious mix of honesty and hope, I guess, going back to what you were saying, honesty about Sunday morning not connecting as perhaps it did in the past, but the hope that comes through the midweek. And some of our most recent research with young adults showed that, you know, honesty that, yes, the church does struggle to keep its young people, young adults. Many do leave, and yet there are case studies of Fresh Expressions of Church that do manage to keep young people and attract new. So, yeah, it's a curious mix, almost like an estuary where there's tidal water flowing in, but that water from the river flowing out at the same time.
I think that probably leads us very nicely onto our first specialist question, which is, what do you see as the benefits of the Fresh Expressions movement?
Yeah. I'm very passionate about ministry with children and young people. I just think it's a no-brainer, and I struggle to understand sometimes why other people aren't as excited as I am about it. But I think Fresh Expressions of Church, well, from our research, Fresh Expressions of Church seem to do about twice as well as inherited Sunday morning congregations in attracting under 16s, which I think is fantastic. And it's not all about the work with primary school aged kids either. There's a diversity, you know, a lot of all age congregations, church plants, youth congregations. So, you know, anything that draws the under 16s into church life and keeps them in church life, I just think is amazing. Secondly, we discovered that 36% of all our leaders of Fresh Expressions of Church that we surveyed were lay leaders. Part of me wants to say ordinary folk, but another part of me wants to say kind of extraordinary folk, just doing what they're doing in their local contexts without any you know, formal training or qualifications or licensing, just folks who feel inspired to do some outreach, to do some mission, and are having a go. And that sense that, you know, leaders don't all have to be ordained to start something, I just think is wonderful as a layperson myself. And I think thirdly, the emphasis on the non-churched, I think, is really important. I know some people struggle with the terminology of churched, de-churched, and non-churched. I think it's a bit pedantic or, you know, a bit pejorative. But keeping our eye on those people who have never had any meaningful connection with church and can't be kind of attracted into church life through kind of the normal historic ways we've been able to attract people, I think keeping that on the agenda is really important. I think our research overall and Day of Small Things said that we tend to slightly overestimate how many people of a non-church background we have coming to Fresh Expressions of Church, but even with that overestimation, Fresh Expressions is still much better at connecting than inherited Sunday morning congregations.
Why do you think there are so many tensions between inherited church and Fresh Expressions?
This is an interesting one, because our research showed that about 3/4 of all the Fresh Expressions of Church that we talked to were actually begun in the local parish and remained in that parish in relationship with the parish church. which is a lot, 3/4. So sometimes I think we have to be careful, and by that I mean our team, that we're not using a sort of false dichotomy, thinking that these things are separate. There is a lot of overlap and a lot of symbiotic relationship and a lot of partnering with resources. So that said, up front, I think from our perspective, we're aware that a lot of those leading fresh expressions of church are busy people. Time and energy is an issue. And often they're doing what they're doing in their fresh expression of church, as well as still helping out at their sort of Sunday morning inherited congregation. So where they may want to be doing pastoral visits to the families that come to their messy church, say, they have to balance that alongside serving refreshments on a Sunday morning or being on the flower rota, and people are torn. I mean, how do you serve the inherited and reach out in your fresh expression? I think it is quite a brave person that says, I'm just going to do one and not the other. I think sometimes people want instant results, and with fresh expressions of church, these things aren't born overnight.
I could actually tell a really good story about that, because for us with Heart for Rudlow, about 18 months in, I was only doing it because I felt it really was what God was calling us to do, but we didn't know, we couldn't see how it was growing. It was really tiny at that point, because a group of people that had been very keen at the beginning had not joined in. But we stuck at it, and we did some really simple things which made a difference. Like, we bought a PVC banner, which was 30 quid. It's not a huge investment, is it? And yet that sort of thing ended up making a huge difference when some people came alongside, a couple of families came alongside who work with us as well, who actually attend the Baptist church nearby. And so actually that's the difference. But there were kind of times when we were thinking, is this ever going to grow, or are we doing the right thing?
Yeah. And is that the dead leg thing, I wonder, sort of having to think, oh gosh, how do we get the word out? How do we...
Possibly. I think it might be that. I think our inherited churches still think that people go to the fresh expressions and then they will grow up to come to proper church. So that's one tension, and trying to get people to really understand that it is proper church is interesting. And maybe when I go back from sabbatical, we might have some, actually do some sort of teaching about what church is and stuff. And also for us, there's a financial tension, because we don't want to ask our messy church people for money. We actually don't do that because of feedback that we've had from people who have said, if you asked us even for a donation when we don't have any money on a Sunday afternoon, we wouldn't come because we wouldn't have any money. And that is just a terrible barrier for people receiving ministry. But how to actually then be able to ask those people who are part of our overall church community and are a bit wealthier, how do we encourage them to give, perhaps even in a non-visible way, is a tension for us.
Yes, and you know, when are these folks going to start coming on a Sunday morning is something we hear a lot from leaders, having to juggle or react to expectations, and it is hard to try and explain what a fresh expression of church is in the long term. The fact that it's planting a new congregation. I think we're so used to, in terms of growth, thinking of adding numbers to an existing congregation, the kind of the church planting mindset that wants to see new churches, new congregations reproduced, is really alien to us. And the harder it gets in terms of resources, both people and financial, it's almost as if people have even less kind of scope to work with the kind of creativity of thinking in terms of multiplication, not just addition.
Do you, things like our nursing home communions that we've started count as fresh expressions? Because they're people who maybe haven't been to church for many years, and but are now coming regularly, coming regularly to worship.
That's one of the fantastic things about fresh expressions of church. I think it's not been all kind of one type of fresh expression, and it's not been one particular age or stage of life. And I was delighted that our research was asking about work with older people, both the elderly, frail, but also the Saga generation or the Mick Jagger generation, kind of across the board. Again, we had to sit down and think, gosh, when do we count older people's work in, say, a residential home, fresh expression of church? Because, of course, you know, any good parish priest has been going in serving residential homes in their parish for years, nothing new in a sense. We decided we would call something a fresh expression of church where there was a sense of, again, congregation as opposed to just service provision. And what would congregation look like? Something about the members themselves taking ownership of what was going on, some pastoral care happening in between gatherings, maybe some giving back, maybe some social action or supporting of worthy causes. Something, some sort of thought about, well, kind of, how can we build on from this? Is there Bible study work in small groups we can do? What would that look like? If the leaders are thinking of it in terms of it being a little congregation, or indeed a big congregation, that we did include. And of course our research, because of the nature of the research, we had to include some things and exclude others, and pulling back from that, it's no value judgment at all, it's what's right in your context. But we did include some.
So what sort of church would you like your daughter to inherit?
We were talking about this, she and I. My daughter's name is Natalie. She's 13, so she's in year 8. We were talking about this only last month, because I've been designing some sort of exploration messy church questions about how does messy church help people grow in their discipleship with Jesus, and I was doing a sort of a presentation that would be a platform to stimulate discussion, and I tried it out on her as my sort of, you know, sample young person to see what she thought and get her feedback. And it was really interesting because we began to talk about, well, what might church going, church belonging look like for her into her teens, and then when she might leave home. Of course, she's at that stage where she swears she'll never leave home. So she was talking about how much she values church both now and how she thinks she would in the future for friendship, for relationship. So I, of course, off the back of that, I would love the kind of church that she could inherit to be one that really values relationships, quality relationships. So I know big churches have a lot of gifts. You know, there's such a sense of momentum, but if she can have relationships, you know, find friendships within that, that would be wonderful. She's very passionate about the environment, so I would love the Church of the Future to be able to address that fifth mark of mission more fully. I would love any church, both now and in the future, to be able to be a place she could ask questions. I think it's so important to be able to ask any question and feel it's a safe space to discuss that with others. And then something about creativity. She is a creative person, and I don't think it's a stage of life issue. I don't think it's because she's young. I think it'll be something that stays with her, and I would love any church that she's part of in the future to have space to really explore that and explore spirituality through her. She's very arty, she likes textiles, you know, stuff like that. I think it's something that the Fresh Expressions of Church movement is really kind of forcing us to revisit. You know, how do we do things in a visual way? How do we do things in a kinesthetic way? How do we allow people to connect with God through nature, kind of all those different aspects of life. How do we, I know that's a tall order for any church. I bet church leaders listening to this are probably thinking, oh, not another dimension of church to have to think about. But I would love a church for Natalie to be like that.
Now the last question is, what is your favourite thing beginning with T?
I do like Tolkien. I love the whole world of Middle Earth. Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit. I think it's fascinating that this fantasy world that he's built has as its lead characters these very small, insignificant characters that end up being the ones that do so much to fight evil and save Middle Earth. It's the book, the film that I return to every now and again. And I get to watch it with Natalie, and she's read The Hobbit, and she started Fellowship of the Ring, which as a 13-year-old I think is I'm pretty impressed with. I hope she continue on, because it can be quite dense at times. But yeah, Tolkien would be my favourite thing beginning with T.
So thank you very much for having me here in Sheffield today, Claire.
You're very welcome.